Rise and Shine, St. Louis. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After with Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and Doug Vaughn. It's time to start your day off right. Now, here's Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
7:04 in St. Louis, you are listening to the Ryan Kelly Morning After, all-new 590 The Fan, KFNS, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Doug LaSalve, and Vaughn with you on the radio program. Doug, today we're going to be joined by Charlie Marlowe, who was at Game 7 of the World Series last night.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be with us. Kelly Chase will be with us. And John Daly will be with us. Huh. Yes, John Daly will be with us.
Well, that's a nice gift.
John Daly at 9:15. That's the old Plow Iggy monster. The combination producing results.
That's the best combo in all of sports talk radio, in my opinion. Crow.
He's perhaps my favorite golfer of all time. Wildly entertaining to watch him play.
What does he sell? Cardinals gear? Is that? Did I read that in our little breakdown?
Part of what he does is sell Cardinal gear. Yeah.
Well,
it
I
says,
like
check out some of his sick Cardinal swag. These are words not written by the Sea Monster.
Yeah, well, who wrote swag?
Or sick. But obviously, the lead today and the focal point of the show, Missouri goes to South Carolina this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be a tough tilt for the Tigers. I don't like their chances much.
Doug, we welcome the audience to always get involved. 855 Cub Talk. We named the phone lines based on our predictions for who would win the World Series. Mm-hmm. And my God, has that paid off. 855 Cub Talk. That's how you can call on the appliances counter phone lines. It's how you can text in. 855 Cub Talk here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I'm sure many people this morning are exhausted because they stayed up to watch a classic. Your emotions watching the Chicago Cubs defeat the Cleveland Indians in extra innings, your final 8-7.
I couldn't believe what I was watching when Davis hit the home run. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I had hoped that the Indians would win it, and then as the Cubs started to rally, it was clear they were gonna win that game. I thought to myself, well, good for the Cubs. It's not like I hate the Cubs, but this was one of those, even with the rain delay sprinkled in there. I didn't care that I had to stay up for and get up early because it was so much fun to watch. And I did enjoy the fact that as much talk as there's been about Hayward not being worth the money, and, you know, he wasn't a fit for the Cardinals, and it's still, you know, he's a lot of years left on his contract. But the fact that when they had that players-only meeting during the rain delay, it was Hayward doing the talking, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, kind of strange that he would be in a position to take a leadership role with, you know, how he had struggled. Right up to the end, I was still not sure who I was rooting for. Rajah Davis hits a home run. I said, yeah, this is cool. I think I want to see the Indians come back. And then the Cubs come back. Well, no, the Cubs, it's their turn. I've got a lot of friends who are Cubs fans. I have a sister-in-law who grew up in Chicago, huge Cub fans. And to see how happy these people are after suffering for so many years, I guess the right team won, after all.
Well, I think the better team won. Yeah. I don't think too many people would dispute that. I think even the Indians themselves would say that, considering what the Indians dealt with, not just in September with the loss of Salazar and Carrasco, but also Michael Brantley's one of the best young outfielders in the game, and I think he had a total of 39 at-bats all season. And there they were, having swept the Red Sox, taken 4 or 5 from the Blue Jays, and now going up against the best team in baseball, and coming back from a 5-1 deficit. When Davis hit that home run, I don't know if there ever has been a sporting event that didn't involve Cardinals at the time, the Rams, the Blues, Missouri, St. Louis University, and the NCAA tournament that's ever gotten me off my couch, you got to be kidding me, fired up. When Davis hit that home run, I was like, oh my God, it's going to happen to them again. They're 4 outs away. There's nobody on base. And Joe Madden, you know, or Aldis Chapman, Tom Verducci reported last night, was in tears before the rain delay. He walked out last from the dugout up the tunnel, and Verducci reported that he was in tears. This was in the rain delay. But for my money, had the Cubs not won that game, Joe Maddon was the one who I think would have been crucified more than anybody else. And I think it would have been justified. Not just for whatever was going on with the Chapman thing in Game 6, but also, I mean, Javier Baez squeezing on a 3-2 pitch with two outs. It was just, let me show you how smart I am. Pulling Hendricks? I mean, those are really bad, bad strategic moves that, because I think the team was so talented, they were able to overcome. But that was really, that was Cardinals-Giants 2014 NLCS debauchery strategically over the last 48 hours. But the Cubs are so good, they're able to overcome it. And had the Cubs lost that, I think people would have said the Cubs lost it, as opposed to the Indians winning. I think that would have been the focal point.
Well, one of the things that people had questions about, what would Chapman be? Maddon said he'd be fine, even though he had been worked to the bone. And then last night, he wasn't the same guy. And, you know, we had a guest on yesterday. They were saying in the game, you could come back, and even if you're throwing 100 miles an hour, fatigue doesn't necessarily take a toll on velocity. It takes a toll on command, and Chapman wasn't.
But his velocity was also down.
It was down, but he did hit, 101, 102. Yeah.
The majority of his pitches, Jason Stark tweeted about how low the velocity was on his pitches. Either way, I mean, there were a variety of things, not just the Chapman thing. But as the game was playing out, I was live betting the Indians, so I would have won a substantial amount of money.
How much?
About $1,300.
That's good.
And there was only a $200 risk on it, because the odds just kept going more in their favor, and I felt like there was value in a Chapman collapse, because it got to one point where it was 10-1. Like, you put 100 on the Indians and you won 1,000, but I only put 50 when it was at that odds. But anyway, my point is I felt like they were vulnerable. And I also, Carl Edwards Jr., that's a guy that I saw that he was going to send out there for the 10th inning. I'm like, talented young arm, but God, that's who you're putting Game 7 of the World Series. And that just shows how barren it was. At the same time, who made the last out? A career 197 hitter who was the last player available to Terry Francona, and he was a defensive replacement to try and catch, I think it was Hayward, off third in a sac fly situation. So they had to hit him. And I gather he hit for Chisenhall. I assume that's what that was. It was a defensive replacement. We saw the asshattery in center field and right field over the last few nights with Cleveland anyway, so I would imagine that's what that was about. But there's Rajay Davis again in the 10th inning with a base hit to close the lead to 1. People are calling it one of the greatest World Series games ever, and I think many would agree with that. I can think of course, 2011 in Game 6, 91 with the Twins and Braves. It was just a great overall World Series. 2001 with a number of classics in the Bronx, in addition to the Game 7 with Luis Gonzalez's walk-off home run. But this is one that I do think I was looking forward to it all day, and it actually somehow delivered, and perhaps more so than I would have expected. It was an incredible watch. It was an incredible game to watch.
Thank God that the rain delay wasn't any longer,
because yeah,
I thought that was just going to spoil that moment completely. I said, if this is a 2-hour rain delay, you're going to lose a big chunk of the crowd, and kind of lost the energy. It was kind of a buzzkill when it happened. But it was only, 15 or 20 minutes,
yeah.
Thankfully.
They played that perfectly, too, because they had an interview with the umpire who had said, yeah, there's nothing behind this one. We wanted them to play in the best conditions. And a lot of times you can have the best intentions and it doesn't work out. That did work out perfectly. And it was a short delay. And I think everyone that was locked into the game was like, okay, I'll wait it out.
Yeah. And the Cubs were all saying they thought that helped them, because the Indians had kind of taken the momentum and they needed a moment there to kind of reset and clear their brains again and come out.
I thought a great moment was as they were coming back and Rizzo's at third base. He puts his hands on his helmet and you can see him go, oh my God. Yeah. I don't know how you can't like Rizzo, even if you're a Cardinal fan that doesn't like the Cubs.
Yeah. And he stands there and gets hit by a pitch and just shakes it off and jogs down to first. Bryant slipped on that throw, that last out. That ball could very easily have sailed over Rizzo's head, and the tying run scores, and the runner goes to third. Yeah, that would have been a tough way for the Cubs to have lost. Or if the guy hits a home run there at the end, that would have been to give up 3 runs in the 10th inning would have been a rough way to go.
Guys, do you think that game helped bring more fans to baseball? Yes, for last night, but I don't know if I would say that it is going to bring more people to the tent, so to speak, because that really was, unless 50 years from now, we're still talking about the Cleveland Indians. I don't know if we'll be doing the show 50 years from now. I hope we are. I hope
we are. Of
course
we will.
You had, you know, top three market with a tortured history, not just having not won, but tortured manners in which they had blown it, playing for a world championship. As Colin Cowherd said, we made reference to this on the show a couple days ago. When it gets down to it, if Fox executives could really be honest, they would say they want the Cubs to lose in seven. And then that way the story is still there for 2017.
That makes a lot of sense, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't think there are nearly, of course, I think it's a pretty obvious statement, nearly as many people watching that if that is the, who was it last year, Royals and Mets, Royals and Giants, Cardinals and Rangers, whatever, Cardinals and Tigers. That it was the Cubs element that brought people to the table for what was an absolutely amazing finish. And I'll tell you this, it got to 5-1, and I knew we were having John Daly on the show today. So Dana Maria said, all right, this isn't happening. It was kind of Cardinals-Rangers 2011 Game 6 where it looked like it was just going away. And so we went over to watch the John Daly 30 for 30. I knew we were having him on today. And I, of course, was monitoring the game on my computer. But sure enough, you know, David Ross is brought in for Lester when Lester's brought in for Hendricks, which, I mean, geez, wow. And, you know, ball bounces off of him. Two-run score on, I don't know if they ruled it a pass ball or a wild pitch. I would imagine it was a wild pitch.
Oh, I would think. It bounced way out in front of him.
So it's 5-3. But then Ross in this final major league game, 39 years old, oldest player to ever hit a home run in a Major League Baseball World Series game, he gives it a 6-3 win. So, but we had flipped, you know, watched the John Daly thing and moved back over. And then that Rajay Davis home run. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. But you knew that Chapman didn't have it. His location was off. The velocity was down. And to Davis's credit, he fouled off pitch after pitch after pitch before pulling the ball on Chapman on a line shot. And it was just an incredible moment. It's amazing that I would say the Cleveland Indians had one of the best moments in their franchise's history around 10 o'clock, and also then about an hour and a half later, one of the worst moments in their franchise's history, all in a matter of 90 minutes.
And even the hit that ultimately beat him, the Zobrist base hit, I mean, that's 6 inches outside of the grass for the third baseman. I mean, that was very close to being a ground ball. They're out of the inning. It comes down to a game of inches, fellas.
What?
It's a game of inches. I don't expect you know what any of that means.
Did you see Davis interviewed? He said he was, you know, he was trying to foul off some pitches and keep the at-bat alive, and he was thankful that it all worked out.
He's trying to keep from striking out.
855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. Those are the appliance discounter phone lines. You can call in. You can text in. Plus, you can email in the morning after at InsideSTL.com. Two tickets to the St. Louis debut of Ice Guardians Monday, November 7th at the Pageant, starting at 7 p.m. Special guest Kelly Chase and Brett Hull. Let's take a listen to Joe Buck's call of the final out of the Cubs winning the World Series.
Hit the lever, Plowsy.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10!
That was kind of weak crowd noise in the background.
Well, that's because it was in Cleveland and the Cubs won.
Yeah, but half the stadium is full of Cubs
really
fans.
Was. It really was.
Right, but I mean, if half nuts. The stadium is, you know, another team's fans, it's not going to have the same impact as a full stadium. And you know, nonetheless, when you heard the reaction from Fowler hitting home run off Kluber in the top of the first, you're like, wow, there are a lot of Cubs fans.
I mean, you could just watch the cutaways. I was shocked how many Cubs fans.
Yeah, it looked almost 50-50. Probably wasn't, but it looked that way.
Here is Pat Hughes of 670, the score in Chicago's call.
Hit the lever, Plowsy.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The Cubs have done it. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
Nice.
Pat Hughes. Doug Pat Hughes.
All right. When I hear some of these announcers for other teams, it always makes me think, gee, I'm glad we got the guys we got here in St. Louis.
You're welcome.
I sure like them a lot more than some of these other guys. Pat Hughes has been there a long time.
But, he does a good job.
Yeah.
And you, yeah. Even if you're a Cardinal fan, that, you know, I think part of it is just the fun of rooting against the Cubs. You had to enjoy that game, and you got to tip your cap to the Cubs being able to come back.
It was wildly entertaining.
Really was.
That's really what you're watching it for.
God, I mean, I was sitting there last night. While I even tuned into the pregame show, you know, so I'm watching that stuff starting at 6 o'clock usually, you know, not really locked in on it, and I was looking so forward to it. And I'm thinking to myself, when the fifth inning rolls around, it's 5-1. I'm like, eh, oh well, it didn't deliver. So it goes. I'll watch the John Daly 30 for 30 and flip over when the Cubs get the final out. And then you're just absolutely entranced. And it didn't even, you know, I would imagine for most people, it didn't even cross their minds, even on the East Coast in the Eastern time zone, to go to bed when that game didn't restart until 12:15 Eastern. And people were going to dig in for as long as it took.
I agree. And you give the Indians credit too. If you just look at the box score, look at the two lineups. I mean,
right.
They hung in there with a Cubs team that on paper was so much better.
Well, they almost had them beat.
They did.
Early, up 3-1. I mean, they'll live with that. These World Series that the Cardinals have blown when they were ahead 3-1. I mean, that still stings.
68-85.
Yeah, I mean, you still remember
those. The NLCS in 96 and 2012, but mm-hmm. That's Barry Zito, so you kind of understand.
Yeah, but you're thinking, well, we got
Deadspin
this.
Deadspin tweeted that out.
There's no way they'll lose three in a row.
Deadspin tweeted out, by the way, the Cardinals have blown 3-1 leads, you know, X
amount
of time.
I don't know. Let's do them.
And then, of course, I get texts from friends of mine around the country. What is Joe Buck a Cubs fan? Please stop. Please stop with that. Please stop with that. Do you get any of that, like, folks that you know that think they have a read on Joe? I go, look, I've known him for a while. He's just calling the game as best he can.
I see it online where they'll on Facebook or Twitter where someone will just come out and say, this is the worst announcer I've ever heard. I said, where does that come from? You've got to be kidding me.
I think he's so good that people are just trying to get something on him.
It's whoever is in that position is going to be critiqued because you have at least 50% of the viewership so emotionally engaged that they are going to feel like anything that is said positive about the opposition is somehow some undercurrent of bias against their team. I mean, this is, you know, and Joe happens to call the World Series and the Super Bowl, and therefore he is on the biggest stage in an era of social media with keyboard gangsters experiencing financial and sexual frustration.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Huh. I'm pretty confident in it, actually.
Sexual but I do have family. I do have family that has rooting interests around the country for the home. And I hear that, you know, oh, he hates the Dodgers. He hates the Phillies. No, he doesn't. He
hates everybody.
I don't even get a hint of that when I watch. I don't get a hint of it that he's rooting for one side over another.
And Smoltz was really, really good.
Yes,
really, really good.
He called the squeeze. He called the bat crap squeeze. He called that.
And even the studio show.
And I don't know if he called it because he saw Baez making his way down to the third base coach and making sure that, which is why I thought that meant that Madden put on the squeeze. Because the talk was, is Frank at Thomas really, you want to talk about insight, Frank Thomas really had some good insight in the rain delay. Doug, I don't know if you caught this, and I want to make sure I attribute it properly. Any team can win this game and the whole world is watching. That's Frank Thomas during the rain delay.
Yeah, but you missed the earlier because earlier he pointed out that both teams, Tim, are in a position to win. Outside of Frank,
Alex Rodriguez and Pete Rose and Kevin Burkhardt.
I think Burkhardt's really good. I think Burkhardt's really good. I think A-Rod has surprised a lot of people because he's really good. And I didn't think I would like Rose, who's sort of the curmudgeon up there, kind of takes pride in the fact that he might not know the players' names. But it did work. They had a little chemistry. And then Frank Thomas pointing out
have that. Nothing to hold their heads down for, except they didn't play that well, and they gave away this World Series.
Doug, that's when hot takes go wrong.
Yeah, well, he speaks the truth, though. It's all true.
Bud Light is the official beer of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We'll be joined by Kelly Chase, and they present our hockey coverage here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, the official beer of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I would imagine plenty of beverages enjoyed in Chicago last night. Was monitoring the Chicago Scanner Twitter account for the police.
What is that? What is that?
That's where you can listen in to the scanner, the police scanner, and all the reports. One of my favorites was two gentlemen have just pushed down a light pole. The wires are still live. Can we get somebody over there?
They got into Wrigley Field at one point, didn't they? I thought I read that.
They broke in?
Yeah. They got over. Somebody climbed over a gate, and they were starting to leak through.
Whites, LOL.
Guys, any trip photos from Tucker yet? Thanks. That's from Mike the Tyke.
That's what we're talking about. That's the headline story.
Well, I believe his opinion was that the tripping would only take place if the Indians won. So he was so close. But Doug, unfortunately.
Well, there were just so many darn many Chicago people there that
he's still like they're tripping.
It could still have happened.
And wouldn't you think the emotion of that Rajay Davis home run in the eighth would have led to a post-game trip set?
Yeah, I don't know about tripping there, but I think it's a good point. Probably just heavy petting?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Guy brings up a good point, and I advance it.
Right. Maybe they just went and got nachos. I mean, that could be. But as Frank Thomas pointed out, you know, when that rain delay hit, that game was up for grabs.
Yeah, I didn't think it was. It tied up in extra innings. I thought clearly the Cubs had it now.
I feel bad for the guy.
I really like Tom Verducci. I think he's outstanding.
It also showed, you know, you do a lot of live TV. Right?
Yeah.
I do a lot. Even at the highest level, a little rain delay, you know, they had some issues there. At the pinnacle of broadcasting, a World Series game, live TV can get you. They threw to Rosenthal at some point.
Yeah, and he was supposed to have Francona with
him. And he couldn't hear because someone didn't plug in the IFB. And you could see at some point, too, I was like, all right, I feel bad for Joe and John Smoltz right now. Throw it back to the set.
I thought they were gonna go. Yeah, exactly. I thought they were going to go.
They told me that something might have not been ready because it did look like they were tap dancing a little.
All it takes is somebody to trip over a wire.
Is that what it takes?
Yeah. One of the stagehands trips over a wire.
So Jim Thome wound up throwing out the first pitch, not Charlie Sheen.
And they downplayed Sheen being there. They showed him once as I was watching. It told me that maybe Major League Baseball was like, nah, we don't really need to make much of this, too. Would have been cool if he...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would have been a really long, involved process. You know, usually throwing out the first pitch is, all right, there he is.
Did they show it?
He's done.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it either.
But to have him storm out of the bullpen and walk out and the music, that would have taken 5 minutes at least.
Everybody would have been talking about it.
I don't know.
Everybody would have been talking about it.
Would have been a different outcome, too.
I think they would have won...
That would have been inspirational.
You think that cost the Indians the title, do you?
Guys, I'm here in Chicago and still drinking and listening to this show. Last night was insane. I had sex with an omnisexual and had my taint tickled by a...
Okay. Who was it?
Mayor Slay's rocket rubber?
I don't think that's who it is.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Mayor Slay's rocket rubber.
Today's program, Charlie Marlowe, who was there last night. Looking forward to talking it over with Chuckles. That's at 8 o'clock on your captain's log. Kelly Chase, presented by Petromart. Blues and Stars tonight, Doug. That's at 8:30. And John Daly, he will be with us. Have you seen the 30 for 30? Anybody seen the 30 for 30? Nurse, Nancy Kersey Lane.
No.
Iggy, it sounds like you may have ESPN, based on your body language.
Well, ESPN screwed me because I was watching something else, and they replayed it after the original on Sunday night, or Wednesday night, Tuesday night. I don't even know what day it is. I'm so tired.
30.
Thanks, Doug.
So I DVR'd it for the next showing. So I sit down last night before the World Series. I'm going to watch this because he's coming on tomorrow.
And were you clothed at the time?
And
or
Sports Center, yes, I was wearing clothes.
Right.
It was at Sports Center, I guess, because the game had just ended or something that night that they SportsCenter was late, so it was like 45 minutes of SportsCenter, so I haven't seen it yet. That's my excuse that ESPN screwed me.
I didn't think it was that good. I was so looking forward to it when they announced their schedules of 30 for 30s. I grew up in a Notre Dame household. The Irish Catholic thing with my dad. My mom went to school at St. Mary's, which was the all girls, Notre Dame across the street before Notre Dame was co-ed. Of course, where she met the great Joe Theismann, and then that's led to unfortunate allegations. Yeah. Unfortunate allegations.
Questions about DNA and all that.
I remember the Catholics versus Convicts shirt from the '88 national champion. Do you remember that, Doug? In Miami,
sure.
Miami,
oh, yeah.
Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm kind of like, oh, they're going to the Miami well again, because they had the U part one, the U part two, and now they're doing Catholics versus Convicts. It seems like it may be overkill, but who knows? Maybe it'll be good. That's the night of the Heisman Trophy presentation. But I was really, and I didn't understand the Fi Slamma Jamma thing, but, to each their own. I haven't even watched it. But the John Daly thing was the one I was looking forward to most, and we watched it last night, and I just didn't think it was that well done. And maybe I'm off the mark on that. I don't know how many people have seen it. I just didn't think it was that well done.
I think because...
I think it's a great story, and I didn't think it was that well done. It's one of those things that falls into your lap, and you just tell the story. And I felt like they told the story up until he won the British Open in 95. And then kind of, the things that he's dealt with was just kind of a quick, like, five-minute part. And
I would think that would be the most compelling thing.
It was certainly the period between winning at Crooked Stick in 91 and then winning in 95. But I just, like, over the last, 20 years, how has it been? I don't know. But either way, he's absolutely candid, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. Because I think I'll get a 55%. This should be a very candid interview. But at the very least, look at the Seamaster booking John Daly. Yes, Seamaster, a rare time you want to talk.
Hello, CZ.
Well, it's funny. I watched the John Daly 30 for 30 last night, I think right around the same time you did.
Wow, how about that, Doug? That's what they call tantric sex.
How do you know? They call that synergy.
Well, the game looked like it was... kind of going to not be all that interesting, so I flipped over and watched that. Tim, I think we're on the same page. It felt like we got two acts of a three-act play.
Well done. God, that's why you're the best.
Two acts of a three-act play.
Yeah, it dealt with him breaking onto the scene, delved into his childhood a little bit. Then he had the tribulations there, came back in 95 to win the British, and then they just kind of yada yada the rest
right.
And it ended.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I was like, and Anna Marie, who most of the time has no interest initially in these things, these 30 for 30s or the Joe Buck interview show, and will be absolutely fascinated. She goes, yeah, I just never could really get into that. And I go, God, what a shame, because the story's incredible. I just don't know if it was told that well. I don't think they had another golfer interviewed, which I think may say something.
And he's not liked? Is that what you...
Well, he certainly... I mean, he made allegations, like in 93, that half the tour's on cocaine. Doesn't necessarily play well for people who respect the idea of keeping things in the room. And once you're known to be a guy who runs around and, you go, okay, you're out.
Maybe the guys who...
Especially while he was dealing with his own stuff. So they interviewed Faraday, who's, like my favorite. I don't know. I don't think they interviewed other golfers. They showed clips of other golfers, like Jack Nicklaus kind of being polite. You could tell, let's just hope he keeps it together. Hale Irwin. I don't know if Hale Irwin would be considered a man of the people. And he goes, he's just bringing these people to the game who have no interest in the game. They just want to watch the show.
Yeah.
But that's true. I mean, he had a peach fuzz mustache and a mullet. And that's just not usually what you'll see. You'll see it sometimes at Belle Reve. I think like 20% of the
usually membership. A caddy, maybe. Maybe the people who put this together just got tired of doing it about 2/3 of the way through and said, "Let's just yada 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 here at the end and take a break." That's happened to me before, where you start really interested in the story, and by the time you get halfway through it, you go, this is going nowhere. Let's just wrap her up.
Tim, you are totally right about the 30 for 30. It ended with the feeling I wanted more. That's from the delivery boy. I also felt like when I saw that it was only an hour, I'm like, God, that's surprising. I would have thought that was at least a 90-minute one. It was only an hour, and yet they still kind of just, I don't know.
He's done so much in his career, whether it be coming back and winning majors and divorces and being beaten by his wife and all the other stuff that's going on with him, that you almost had to pick what were you going to do. You know, we only have an hour to do this. Do we do half golf?
Yeah, but
half...
I mean, they do 90 minutes and they do two-hour ones, too. So I felt like that was one that warranted, especially if he's willing to talk. And
sure.
He was. And he's a candid interview. Now, I don't know what he'll be like at 9:15. You never know. We are always at the mercy of the interviewer. And oftentimes the person we're interviewing is, you know, just outstanding. And people, what a great interview by you guys. Well, we had a great interview subject. You never know. I don't know what he'll be like. I'll be able to tweet it out if you want 30 seconds into the interview if it's going to be any good. You can pick up a read immediately. But I just thought the 30 for 30, I was like, God.
Higgy, did you say he was beaten by one of his wives?
Yeah, Sherry. I talked to Sherry Wednesday night, and she said none of the wives were in it. And I said, what?
No, Paulette was in it, his second wife.
Yeah, but as far as a big storyline, she goes, they didn't talk to me. They didn't talk to a lot of us. And she said, for the people I talked to, it wasn't very good, but they didn't ask me to be in it. But yeah, Sherry, I think it was in Memphis. He showed up at the St. Jude with his face all scratched and got a restraining order from her. Mm. Yeah, she's a piece of work.
This is his first wife?
Last wife.
Sounds like a fiery little spitfire.
So he's engaged now. So what, he's been married three times and engaged?
Four times, I think.
Married four times and engaged for a fifth?
Yeah, he's not marrying this one.
Well, they kind of glossed over the gambling. I mean, that was like two minutes.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Because that's a huge thing. He said he's lost 95, I believe he said he lost $95 million gambling.
$95 million.
$95 million, and he said he's won $45 million. Something along those lines, that ballpark parameter. And hold on, let me get some scratch paper. Is it scrap paper or scratch paper?
You can go with either in this case, Tim. Yeah.
I think it's scrap with a P.
So that means he lost.
Says he's still worth $20 million, though. So he's okay.
Paulette Daly aged well. She is fine. That's from the 314. A little heavy on the eyeliner.
Okay.
But
Sherry used to be. Well, she wanted to get in Playboy, and she called me and wanted to get in Playboy, but didn't want to get
naked.
So
when women, when golfers' ex-wives want to get in Playboy, they call you?
Well, I'd known Sherry a little bit, and and she wanted to get in Playboy.
How did you know her?
But she didn't want to get naked.
How are you going to get her in there?
Well, I have connections.
You know Hef?
No.
How did you know her?
I met her in Memphis.
That should answer your question.
And she gave me a phone number, and then she had a book that came out, so we...
Why'd you give her your phone number?
How did she give me her phone number?
No. Why?
We were just talking. But then her book came out, so we got her on to do the book and did a few things, and I was working on trying to get her here for a book signing, but there was really no interest.
She interested in doing a Foot Fetish Friday?
Now she wants to get in Playboy again, but she's... Now there's no nudity. She may want to do it, but I said, you're pushing what? 50? And you're 8 months pregnant?
Well, I'll put Fetish Friday.
That's not the typical Playboy look.
Some people have certain things. And you know what I say? To each their own. And Doug, I'm pro-human nature.
Yeah.
She wanted to come on. She goes, can I come on Friday after John's on so I can kind of talk? I said, it's not up to me. I'll have to ask.
Yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah. So she's going to listen to the interview today live. She's going to stream
it.
She's
going to live stream?
She's going to live stream it. And then.
Wonder if she wants to text in.
Yeah, she still
has Texan is sad panda.
She still has a lawsuit against his fiance for stealing John away while they were still.
So married. This is the most recent wife or the old one? Which wife is this? Wife number
Sarah,
one.
Sherry is the last wife, which I think was his fourth.
Okay,
and now they he's had with a kid a woman, together. I believe, they had JD
named Annika or something like
Anna.
That.
Anna, and they'll never get married.
Annika Sorenstrom,
long hitter, had a nice run at Forest Hills, Doug.
Yeah, that's John Daly's daughter.
No, she had the last kid by him, John Jr.
Sorenstam did.
Oh, God, Sherry.
Oh,
God. All you got to do is bring up Lady Gaga's Meat Dress, Doug, and Iggy will start throwing things.
she was the last wife, and supposedly they had an affair. Anna and him had an affair while they were still separated, so she filed suit. Because I think in Memphis or Mississippi, where it happened, it's one of six states where you can actually sue the lady who banged your husband while you were still married. So she has a lawsuit going on for like 5 years.
And she wants to discuss that with us too.
No, she just wants to come on and talk about, well, she's going to see what John has to say, and then she's going to come on. I guess she just likes to rip John whenever she can, but I'll leave it up to you. If you want to get her on, we can get her on.
The cat, we can talk it over is what we can do.
Yeah, look forward to that. He said John Daly said that he had no idea that he had lost so much money gambling until he did his taxes. He thought he had lost maybe $20 million.
Well, he would play those high-limit slots, which is always odd to me when I walk past those rooms. First off, there's hardly ever a time where somebody's actually in there. But then I think if you're in there, something has to be off because the slot machine is not necessarily the game of one who is calculating expected value, return on investment. And if you're in a position where you have that kind of money, you're probably not somebody who is a slot machine player. But John Daly, of course, is an outlier. He won the PGA Championship in 1991, and then they went to McDonald's because he didn't have any money.
You got to pour a lot of quarters into the slot machine before you lose $90 million.
Now, wait a minute. I did not know this.
He said he would play blackjack, and he would fill up every hand at the table. You know, so I think there's seven places to bet. So he would, because you win a lot of money in there, of course, but, you know, there's another side of the coin.
He was playing $5,000 slots, and he was able...
$5,000 slots. And holy moly.
He was able to deduct his gambling losses. I did not know you could do that.
Yeah. That's not how I understand
That's
it.
That's what he said.
You can deduct them against your winnings.
He said, gambling winnings are fully taxable, you can also claim your losses.
I think JHE might want to get a hold of him before he comes on at 9:15.
He said... winnings are reported on your federal income form as other income.
Iggy, you are so cool with all of your connections. Just kidding, you are a loser.
Hey.
That's when you know the show's audience is expanding because there's no creativity. They're just act.
Who is that angry. From?
That's just 314, Doug.
I'm sorry you had to hear that, Iggy.
Put your name on it, buddy.
Uh-oh, why? You'd seek retribution if you had a name?
Buddy. You're being silly. No, I mean, I don't care. I'm not being.
You don't cool. care.
I was in the middle of telling a story about Sherry. It had nothing to do with bragging about it.
Sherry,
how exciting is that? That I know Sherry Daly. Like I'm a big wig. If I know Sherry Daly.
Well, I think it's kind of exciting.
Perhaps it could have been your connection to Playboy magazine.
Well, that's been going on forever.
Have you got anyone in?
That's not nothing new.
Have you ever gotten anyone in?
Almost.
Really?
Your girl next door. Pleasured the hell out of her, and now she's with women.
Okay.
Danielle Woodruff.
That's the names.
She posted it herself. She wasn't hiding anything.
I never know.
All right, well, Danielle. Yeah, she got a photo.
Doesn't want to get sued. That's all.
I'm just trying to do.
Every day, he just doesn't want to get sued.
Yeah.
He runs a station that has a lot of stars that say a lot of things, and his one hope every day is that he doesn't get sued.
All right, well, I apologize, but she actually made it known. She was bragging, not bragging, but she was excited that it happened. So, no, she didn't get in, but they flew her up for a photo shoot, so almost, not quite. But I mean, it's nothing new. I've known Gary Cole from Playboy for 20
Coleman.
Years.
Who's Gary Coleman?
Gary Cole. He's no longer with them, but he was Hef's right-hand man.
Is he related to Darnell Cole?
So, I think so.
Tim is right about the treatment of gambling losses regarding our tax treatment of gambling losses. It's from Craig.
Well, explain that to me.
Well, so if I won, and I do this, I've had to do it, you know, for whatever, like almost a decade now, I suppose, you know, $40,000 in tournament winnings, whether it be online, live, but my buy-in total is $50,000, and so therefore I'm minus 10. I can't deduct the $10,000 loss. But if I were to win 100 and have 80,000 in receipts, or what a claim, 80,000 in losses without receipts, the 80,000 counts against the 100. So if he just loses 50 million, he can't then deduct just 50 million.
No, but it said his winnings were about 25 million or something, and his losses were 95 million. So he was able to use the losses to take away from some of the winnings.
So therefore, he wouldn't be taxed on the 20 if this were an annual thing. But because he lost 70, he couldn't deduct 70 overall.
Now, let me ask you this. You know,
well, or I'm just getting really bad advice, but I'm pretty confident on this because I've had multiple accountants.
You know,
because I make sure to. You know, now I don't really play poker all that much, but that was something I had to make sure I kept track of.
I quietly go to the Luxor twice a year. You know,
the pyramid.
And I play the $1,000 slot. And I've won, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars without deducting it.
You got to be a quality player to win at the slots. You got to really know what you're doing.
Well, if Jay's listening, maybe he can text in.
Jennings?
Yeah, I don't remember him gambling that much back because it was me, Jay, and Smitty after Daly won. Here, I'll brag again, Texter. After he won, I think, the Bogey Hills Invitational, and we went out to the boat and gambled. And I can't remember him playing huge amounts. I could be wrong, though.
The Bogey Hills Invitational?
Yeah.
What's that?
A while back.
Yeah, I remember
right
that.
Here
at Bogey Hills.
I think it was. I think it was a $100,000 tournament. I think he won a pretty good chunk of change.
And what year
that.
Was this? You think?
Oh, it had to be back in the 90s.
Is that like the Hooters?
But he had already won the PGA.
I think it was after the PGA. Somehow Smitty got him into play it.
Wow,
I could be wrong. Jay, if you're listening, text in.
Text in, Jay.
He's not. Listening. He's got work to do. He's not listening.
He might be at the Rock opening up.
From Craig the CPA, Tim's right as usual. Hold on.
Okay, Craig.
That was a stretch ring.
Yeah, well, I don't have a good spin.
You know, Tim McKernan is like that. He knows everything.
Okay.
It's a hot shot. It's a hot take, Bill. A week from tonight. This is so hot. Duck.
What?
A week from tonight.
Yeah.
We're doing TMA Live at Hot Shots in Fenton. And Bonnie Rotten will be there with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Lee says she wants to be in attendance to meet Bonnie Rotten. Wow.
So she knows who this rotten gal is.
Well, I mean, she was AVN Performer of the Year.
Oh, she was.
Yeah. I mean, do you know who Carrie Underwood is? Exactly.
Yeah.
See?
They do the same thing.
I don't know who did it.
Entertainment.
But there were how many gentlemen in this room? There were four. Somebody made air, and it's unfortunate. And I just want that on the record. It's the first time it's happened in this studio. And it's an unfortunate fragrance.
Somebody made air in the studio.
Yep. It's an unfortunate situation.
You think someone had a little gas expulsion?
Yep.
Who was it?
I don't think. I know.
Who was it?
I don't smell anything.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I don't know.
I don't smell.
It's over here in this corner.
Plowsy.
Guys, I have a connection at Playgirl. I know Doug Vaughn, biggest in the biz. Tee-hee. That's from the White Collar Gangster.
Yeah, well, that's hard to argue with.
Guys, what do you think now becomes the highlight of John Lackey's career? Breaking the Curse or Sick? It's from the 217.
Do we have that? That's a little homage to Lackey. I know Cardinal fans probably don't love the fact that Lackey and Hayward decided to jump on the Cubs bandwagon, and now they get rings.
Looks almost like they made the right decision.
Weren't you surprised to hear that, though, that Hayward was the guy that called the meeting and everyone, like, deferred to him?
Yeah, I was.
That he called, yeah, because if there was one thing that we heard from Adam Wainwright, actually, when he decided to go to Chicago, is that he just didn't really want to have the pressure that would come with being, quote-unquote, the guy that would sign that contract, knowing that the guys, the core, Wainwright, Molina, and Holiday, wouldn't be here for the long haul. And so the insinuation, or perhaps just the interpretation of that, is that he didn't necessarily really have leadership qualities or have a desire to be a leader. And God bless him if that's the case, to each their own. But that was a leadership move in a clubhouse full of real stars. So, a tip of the cap to him.
I don't know. I haven't told to you.
That was a question from last night?
I believe so. Get her interpretation of the World Series win. But, I mean, I realize plenty of Cardinal fans don't like Hayward. So, you know, whatever. I don't know. What a game. God, what a game. I don't know if anything, you know, because again, it was the Cubs that made that thing. If that were just two other teams, I don't think I would have felt the same way. You know?
It didn't
have to do with my bet. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, that would have been nice, but I was like, no way, it's going to happen. I remember when the Bartman thing happened in 2003, I'm like, oh my God, this crap just keeps happening to this organization. And here we are in the eighth, and I'm thinking, at that time, what I'm thinking of are the ramifications for Joe Maddon and the organization. You know, the ramifications for Aroldis Chapman, the Brad Lidge syndrome. Now, Lidge was a mess after what happened in October 05 at Minute Maid Park, and then he did get it back, you know, going to Philadelphia, and he got it back. But I don't know if he was ever what he was, you know, before the Pujols home run. And how would that affect Chapman as a free agent? Crying in the dugout as they had to, the rain delay. Joe Maddon, you know, it'll understandably. I mean, they just won the World Series, and he was the manager, the only the second manager to take the Cubs to a World Championship. It will be a footnote, but there were some real questionable strategic decisions that played a role in that collapse. And unfortunately, if you are cheering against the Cubs, they were able to respond. And both Bryant and Rizzo, on their own, brought up Jason Hayward's speech in the rain delay. And yes, that perhaps was the most surprising element of last night's game.
I mean, Hayward was a guy who, even when he got here in the short time he was in St. Louis, he had juice in the clubhouse. I'm not saying he was calling meetings or anything, but a lot of guys looked to him and said he was, you know, sort of wise beyond his years. He is that kind of guy. Now, he didn't have a good year offensively, and I'm not saying that the contract's worth it, but you get a World Series ring, and guys point to the fact that Hayward did this, certainly enhances his value, regardless of the stats.
Yeah. And what about Schwarber's value?
It's unbelievable.
Who came back from major knee surgery, has three hits last night, hitting the ball through the shift, got a little excited.
Stole a base.
Yeah, what a hitter he is. Boy, he's kind of a fun guy to watch.
See, that's why even if they hadn't won, it wasn't like they weren't going to get another bite at the apple. You never know, but they are set up for a nice run. They got a heck of a team.
Yeah, certainly with position players who are all very young and all-star, not all of them, but several all-star calibers. Like their whole infield was the all-star team this year. And Schwarber might be an all-star caliber player.
Sure looks like
to think that those guys all figure to be there for the next 4 or 5 years. Yeah, that's quite a nucleus.
Maybe Hayward just gives pregame speeches and doesn't start, but just...
But, you know, even as good as they were with the most dominant closer in the game, they still barely won it. They barely got it done.
And it was great. You know, as a baseball fan, you sit through a lot of 6-1 games in Cincinnati, and there are times you're like, it's not so rewarding. But baseball at its best, we saw it in the World Series, and boy, is that compelling.
Postseason baseball is outstanding. You get a regular season game when it's 98 degrees and it's nothing much happening, and not so much. But you can't beat postseason baseball.
And by the way, if I can get a plug in, 6:30 tonight, Fox Sports Midwest starts hot stove programming. Danny Mac hosts. Rick Horton's on there. We got a visit with Matt Adams. We got Lance Lynn in studio. We got John Mazalok interview. A lot of stuff.
I saw some of Ricky Horton's tweets the last couple nights. Apparently, he put a picture of himself wearing his Cleveland Indians jersey. I didn't realize he played for the Indians, but apparently at some point he did. And apparently he was getting all kinds of hate for insensitivity towards Native Americans.
What?
Yeah.
I saw him tweet that people are calling him racist. I didn't know what
that's
what
because he for. Posted a picture of himself in an Indians jersey?
Yeah.
I don't understand at all, for real.
Well, you wouldn't think that everyone else would understand, too, that he was just saying, hey, I played for the Indians, something like that. But apparently he got lots of hate about how dare you.
Can I say this, though? When you're on Twitter, you have to step carefully. Like, I did a little stupid thing because I have a stupid Twitter account, and I put Team STL, and I put Cardinals Blues, and I added the Indians because I know a lot of Cardinal fans are rooting for the Indians. So I said, for tonight, Team STL with the... And I chose the Indians logo that didn't have the mascot in it just so I could avoid, you know, the Twitter folks out there that are looking to pounce on you for anything.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable.
I see his tweet, another racist tweet, worked for the Cleveland Indians. Ignorant people on Twitter calling me racist. Stop, you don't know me. Hashtag judgmental.
Yeah.
I don't...
Can you imagine a more gentle soul than Ricky Horton?
Posted a photo of my wife wearing my Indians jersey to work for Halloween today. It was called a racist. Used to be slander. Hashtag Twitter bozos. Posted a photo of my wife wearing my Indians jersey to work today. Like, what? I don't get it. So, like, just because she was wearing it, so is everybody in Cleveland wearing an Indians jersey? Right?
Apparently so.
I don't understand.
It's crazy.
Apparently they are. Especially that Horton guy.
I'm just trying to follow. Like, but, and I'm trying to see any sliver of whatever was going on. Not sure when Ann found the time for all those tattoos, and it's a picture of her wearing Cleveland Indians cap.
Oh, so that's what it's about.
Okay, I got to see the mentions. I don't know why I'm doing this to myself. It's like reading the STL Today comments section, making myself, it's like automatically going to shoot me into depression. This is so racist. Hashtag not your mascot. Doug, that's from at DJ Space Pants. Do you follow
him? You know, I don't. I don't. That's one that slipped through the cracks.
Oh, I see. And his whole thing is, his byline on Twitter is, Native Americans are hashtag not your mascot. It's time for a change. Yeah. What's up, SJW?
So Ricky Horton is behind the Cleveland Indians logo.
No, well, now it's out there. Now it's out there.
See, I get people having an issue with
Come
that.
Come out of your white supremacist shell and realize other races deserve respect, too. I think it's just one guy.
But it does go on. I tweeted when Berkman was back in St. Louis. I guess it was last year or maybe the year before. It runs together for me. I just tweeted out a picture. Nice to see Big Puma back. And I guess he had taken some political stance in the Houston area or wherever. Yeah. And all of a sudden, a stupid, innocuous, hey, it's nice to see. And I had all these people angry at me and ripping me. But that goes on Twitter. You have to step
blocking.
Carefully.
Yeah. Blocking. If it's just one or two stupid comments from some knucklehead, who cares? You just have to ignore it as insignificant.
At Putty Chains just tweeted at me. Do you follow at Putty Chains?
I don't. That's another one that I'll have to look up. I don't follow.
This guy keeps saying Daly will not marry his fiance. He is begging you guys to ask him why, but you ignore it. Is this guy Iggy?
I don't know.
You said one line about it. I don't know.
Yeah, am I begging?
I mean,
I don't remember.
I didn't really think that much of it. Why won't John Daly marry fiance?
I'm not going to answer you now.
Good. Good for you, Iggy.
Doug, Putty Chains now is going to lose it.
Sorry, Putty.
Good for you, Iggy.
That was just a comment on my part. There was no answer needed.
No.
No.
I didn't hear you begging about it.
I mean, perhaps so it's because of, you know, you go 0 for 4 and you keep chopping it up 50-50. Maybe even more, and you might go, yeah, this probably isn't the best business deal I could make.
Maybe it's not about business. Maybe it's about a fragile heart now, Tim.
Oh, my God.
He's loved and he's lost, and now he's afraid to serve up his heart again, Doug.
Yeah, well.
You ever been there? Did you ever have your heart broken by a woman back in the early days when you're running around with the Bee Gees in Miami wearing your bikini pants?
You think I wore bikini pants, do you?
The overnight ratings for the 2016 World Series, 25.2 rating from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Doug, that's 7 to 12 to you and me, Russ, Audrey. The estimated 38 to 42 million viewers on Fox. How about that? That's a monster.
That's pretty good. And yet it was still dwarfed by some of those presidential debates. I wonder what the rating was in Chicago.
Oh, you mean Chicago's your town, see?
Chicago's my town.
I was looking at some of the ratings, and the rating was higher in Cleveland than it was in Chicago for some of the other games. I don't know about last night.
Taking joy in the fact that Clevelanders were trolling Warriors fans for blowing a 3-1 lead, and 5 months later...
Wait, now, was that a French horn? Or
yes, it was.
Is that what that was?
Because some people would say the trumpet, and they'd say the saxophone.
French horn's kind of makes a sadder
noise. You said
noise.
It was. You identified the instrument?
You know, it's weird. I was looking at the numbers for some of the World Series games, and like the highest markets, like Kansas City, I guess it's become a great baseball town, not as good as St. Louis.
No,
of course not. But they had a huge number for the World Series, and Indianapolis did as well.
Oh, that's Jake Query, though.
So Jake got everyone on board?
Guys, Tim blocked Bubbles years ago for slandering Mizzou on Twitter. Yes, that's my game. Somebody takes a shot at Missouri, I block.
What are you, rights holder?
Like I give a damn. And I'll tell you what, Doug, it's awfully difficult to find somebody taking shots at the University of Missouri.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen very frequently.
Doug was wearing boy shorts while running with the Bee Gees in Miami. Kind of a non sequitur text, but it just came in.
I never ran with the Bee Gees. I had that one... fishing excursion
with Barry
Andy,
Gibb.
Andy Gibb was
Maurice
on the boat.
No, were they Maurice able to fit there. You in some coon skin boy panties?
That was the question I asked him, and his reply was no. Move along, please. So that was my only run-in with the Bee Gees.
Hey, you catch a Marlin?
No, nobody caught a thing. They had all this sophisticated gear, sonar stuff, and cameras under the boat. And so, yeah, they're right there. No one caught a thing. I'm not sure there are fish in the ocean sometimes. Could be the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on the American public. No one even got a nibble.
Guys, I hear Edward G. Robinson bought him for Will Gear. Thanks.
Well,
Will Gear was the guy that wore a dress? Is that...
No, he was Grandpa Walton.
Yeah. Right, but wasn't there some that you guys uncovered that later he wore a dress?
I think that was Frank.
Frank Cusimano.
That's right.
Frank Cusimano wears a dress.
No. He uncovered it.
Clarify. All right. I'm pretty sure that there was something with Will Gear, because we had a lot of Will Gear references.
Yeah,
he was a gentleman that later in life discovered... a passion for women's clothing.
Doug, Rich and Charlie's Pizza is featured this week in our Listener Rewards program. Rich and Charlie's Pizza is located on South Woods Mill Road in Town and Country. The mouth-watering pizza. I like that adjective.
Mouth-watering is good, isn't it?
The mouth-watering pizza is made on crispy, thin crust with homemade sauce and generous toppings from edge to edge with the perfect blend of Italian cheeses. And the menu offers much more, including the grilled chicken, salsiccia parmigiano, and buffalo chicken sandwiches, their famous salad, toasted ravioli, and more. Support the sponsors and enjoy a great deal at Rich and Charlie's Pizza starting this Friday at 9 a.m. Buy a $50 gift certificate for just $25. Just click Listener Rewards on the InsideSTL.com homepage. Wow. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Charlie Marlowe is going to join us from Cleveland. He experienced it all in person last night. We'll hear what he saw behind the scenes. Charlie Marlowe, Kelly Chase, and John Daly. Still to come, plus your emails, the morning after at InsideSTL.com. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning After.